A historic meeting with North Korea. The Trump administration wants courts to further dismantle Obamacare. That, plus the Indiana GOP platform, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 15th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana lawmakers applauded the historic agreement between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, even as some preach caution about what the future might hold.
There was fairly universal praise among Indiana's congressional delegation for the initial step taken by North Korean and American leadership, but Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly says he's troubled by President Trump's decision to end military exercises around the Korean Peninsula, and he says any lasting peace agreement must include North Korea's complete denuclearization with independent verification. That's something Republican Senator Todd Young stresses, too. He says a strong deal with North Korea must be rigorously enforced.
How big a win is this for President Trump? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, credit where credit is due on this one to President Trump?
Well, if we're talking about the photo op, yes, he got a great photo op. The question, I mean, we don't know what this is. We've had the same assurances from other generations in this family in Korea that they really wanted peace and they wanted everything to work out and they wanted to be part of the international community. That's all we have here. We don't have anything more, except that we're now suspending our operations in southern Korea, which really worries not just Joe Donnelly, but also Todd Young and the rest of us who remember that for the last 60 years, we've been told how important it is for the United States to guarantee a democracy in South Korea. And you know what? It's worked. That's the fifth largest economy in the world is South Korea, thanks to our protection. And now we're taking it away. Now, I assume that if there's an attack, we'll go to their defense, but you need these joint operations because you have two different armies. They have to know how to communicate, how to talk, and how to work with each other, which is why these exercises are done. And heretofore, it was always, it doesn't matter what the cost is. This is too important to let slide. And he gets over there and, like on a whim, says, we're not doing this anymore. You know, our foreign policy needs to be a little bit more thought out. When you listen to what he said, it sounded like he was meeting with the Pope, as opposed to a dictator who kills his enemies, starves his people, and doesn't believe in human rights. It's pretty amazing.
Is there a little too much celebration early on, or is this the right tone so far?
I think everyone's going to this eyes wide open. Everyone's kind of said some version of the same thing, which is great first step, open these lines of communication. There's a lot of details to color in here. And be careful. I think everybody said that, right? I think they've since clarified and said they're suspending the war games exercises, but not military training or military presence, right? So they've tried to start clarifying some of the details.
Are important.
Right, but I kind of get it. I mean, you're sitting across the table from a guy saying, give up your nuclear weapons, and while you're thinking about it, we're going to go practice invading your country, right? That's a little different than maintaining your military presence and stand it ready, but not going through this large-scale provocative exercise. But, from a political standpoint, I think people are going to view this as a win. They elected Donald Trump not because they wanted him to go tiptoe around the lines on the Iran deal and North Korea and the other kind of third rails of foreign policy that other presidents have handled much differently.
Yeah, as a political issue in a re-election year for Joe Donnelly, Joe Donnelly struck the tone that Mike just talked about. Good first step, but is that the only way he can play it at this point? Is he worried about, I mean, on the one hand, you want to see peace with North Korea. On the other hand,
that's probably the logical way to play it. I mean, that actually happens to be a fairly smart way politically and probably governmentally to play it. Clearly, the regime in North Korea is mercurial, we'll put it in the best terms possible. They have promised sort of some of these same things in the past and then have turned on a dime. But then again, our administration seems to have turned on a dime on several issues as well. I mean, a few months ago, this was Rocket Man, who was the scourge of the earth during the State of the Union address what was it, 5-10 minutes were set aside specifically for talking about how this was a blight on the planet. So you get a bit of a whiplash here about where we're going to end up. Having said that, when we were talking, what, 9-10 months ago about nuclear holocaust, and people in Hawaii, when they had their bogus alert, were thinking it was the end of the world, and a lot of us probably were
little
thinking...
did we know it was going to be a volcano.
Well, the volcano. Yeah. That's
they were
really
actually ahead of the game.
Really devious right. plot. But, I mean, we were reading stories about, you know, fallout shelters and what to do, the old stop, drop, or whatever we did practice
yeah,
in
I'm
grade school.
Yeah, I'm not sure that really still...
Right. But, I mean, compared to that... We're a heck of a lot better off than we were then.
Given the mercurial nature of the North Korean administration and perhaps a little bit the American administration, is there very little political downside to this for President Trump? Because if it falls apart, it's, well, there they go again. They just screwed it up.
I think that the downside is that when people recall that the North Korean regime is murderous, has sacrificed its own population for the purpose of gaining nuclear weapons, has flown in the face of the rest of the civilized world for generations, and the hawks of the world suddenly become the doves of the world, the apparent dichotomy here, we're through the rabbit hole nature of this again, makes the whole thing pretty incredible to understand. Our foreign policy seems to be now function out of the right front pocket. You know, whatever comes out is where we're at. And I think that when you're talking about the rest of the world, especially the atmosphere that occurred just before he went to the Korean Peninsula, he was alienating our allies at the same time he was embracing a dictator. And so just on its face, that's a little hard to process for somebody who, in my entire life, you're turning upside down everything I've known and come to understand about the way of the world. I think if it had come more gradually, if it had been something that we had warmed up to and had methodically moved toward, it would have made more sense. But right now, it's just topsy-turvy, and I think there's a lot of political risk in that.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the initial agreement with North Korea lead to its complete denuclearization? A yes, B no, or C it is too early to tell. Last week's question, does the Indiana GOP's platform fight show the party is divided? 80% say yes, 20% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the U.S. Department of Justice says it won't defend in court the Affordable Care Act's protections for people with pre-existing conditions, drawing praise from Indiana's Attorney General.
The ACA barred insurance companies from charging higher premiums or denying coverage to consumers with pre-existing conditions, which includes diabetes, heart disease, cancer, pregnancy, and depression. In a court case brought by 20 states, including Indiana, the DOJ filed a brief arguing those protections are unconstitutional because they tie to Obamacare's individual mandate, which the Trump administration also argues must be struck down. Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill applauds that position and says the ACA must be eliminated so as to rebuild health care policy on what he calls a stronger legal foundation.
Mike O'Brien, Democrats have increasingly begun campaigning on health care, including here in Indiana, and Joe Donnelly seeing it as a strength for the first time in, quite frankly, quite a few years. Does this feed into that?
I don't think anyone's winning on health care this year. Democrats still own Obamacare. They own premiums doubling since 2013, going up another 15% in 2019 nationwide. The decision here is narrow on exchanges, on the exchange product. And the question here isn't a policy one, it's a legal one. Can you sever the individual mandate from guarantee issue, which is what people with pre-existing conditions rely on, that an insurance company cannot deny you, and community rating? What are you going to pay into that system? So it's fairly limited here. Indiana, before 2014, and Obamacare forced us to shut down our own high-risk pool, had a solution for that population. And it was popular, it was bipartisan. It was written by a House Democrat, Insurance Committee Chairman, and a Senate Republican, and it's supported by the governor and the insurance industry, and we had a good system here for that. We had to dismantle that in 2014 because of the Affordable Care Act. So that, so maybe looking back to the states for some of these solutions is the right direction to go from a policy standpoint. I think Curtis Hill makes the right point here that if the individual mandate is unconstitutional, the other things that apply to issuing insurance under the Obamacare exchange also have to be repealed. We'll see where the courts land on that.
There's a difference there between policy, the policy question and the legal question. But if you pull out the rug on the legal side, if you dismantle the Affordable Care Act, can we rely on this Congress to put something in place to protect those
people? That's always been the problem politically on our side, because when people just say repeal, in their minds you're going back to something. You're going to nothing. Yeah. You just repeal a law and nothing exists.
They can't pass a resolution telling you it's Friday. Okay, they can't do it. And the problem with this is it is not, the individual mandate has not been ruled unconstitutional. You had action by the Congress to take away the penalty from the individual mandate, which is what subsidizes pre-existing conditions. So they're telling the 52 million Americans, okay, who all have families, that they, you know, drop dead, basically. We're not going to cover it. Our high-risk pool never worked. It never worked because nobody could afford to spend thousands of dollars a month in premium payments. It was ineffective. And that's exactly why President Obama stepped in with this, to cover the pre-existing conditions, to cover up to age 26, to take the lifetime cap out. And what Republicans are saying is go back to no insurance. And it's even worse than that, because now if you work for an employer and you're being hired by an employer and you have a pre-existing condition, that employer can deny you coverage. So going forward, even if you have an employment insurance through your employer, you can be denied coverage with a pre-existing condition.
Well, it depends.
So they're saying to all of these people,
if your employer is fully insured, but if you're self-insured, you're not. And that's the vast majority of people that are employed by their, or get coverage by their employer. You're protected under that.
No, you're not. Not going forward.
An employer with a large group self-insured plan is not going to start kicking people
out.
But they could.
They can.
It probably wouldn't be wise.
Well,
I don't know how you attract them.
It depends on what the condition is.
Let me ask, from the political standpoint, Mike Braun, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate at the GOP convention last weekend, talked about how one of the few policy things that he really talked about was we got to get rid of this Obamacare, and his words, boondoggle. Is that going to play well here, right now?
You know, I think it's an interesting situation, and it's an interesting observation. The answer is no, and the reason is this. Obamacare, the ACA, has always been unpopular among conservatives, and so they've always chafed against it. It became law. The Democrats had to deal with that for years as it was implemented, and it was a political albatross in many ways for a lot of Democrats because they had to do all the work. So now the tide has changed. The Republicans have control, and they were not able to repeal it. They were not able to do much at all with it, and it's become their burden now. And it's the Republicans who are responsible for doing something about the Affordable Care Act. And as Mike said, if they just repeal it, there's nothing. So in all of those years when the Democrats were moving the Affordable Care Act, the Republicans did not have an alternative in the wings ready to go. And so we're sitting in a situation where Mike Braun has to say, I want to get rid of this. But the public opinion has turned, and they say, well, we like having our pre-existing conditions covered, and we like having the assurance of having some way to get insurance, even if we're not employed, and many other aspects of the Affordable Care Act. So the Republicans have a political problem here. They need to have an alternative, and they haven't presented it yet.
Does this latest, I mean, Mike's right in that the actual details of the case are perhaps fairly limited, but you have to read past the headline to get to that, and I'm not sure most people do. So if the headline is Trump administration stops protecting pre-existing conditions, does that just add fuel to the fire for Democrats
in a positive way
for Democrats?
Yeah, it becomes their torch that they can scorch the backsides of people who have torn apart this plan. You know, the irony here is that as you look at the legalities and what a lot of people on the Republican side of the aisle now say, we may like the policy, but it's the legalities. Keep in mind, it was the notion of trying to appease Republicans that led to this construct in the first place, because there were a lot of Democrats who said, let's just go with a single-payer universal plan, something more akin to what we see
in Europe, or what we see.
Much more popular.
And, but this was came out of a Republican-leaning think tank, and with a hint of Mitt Romney and what he had done in Massachusetts. And so this was, in many ways, a concession to Republicans and to conservatives with the whole individual mandate. So it's just ironic now that that would be
in the game of Jenga.
That's the brick that we have pulled apart. And I think it will. We've said on this show now for probably a couple of years that eventually this could harm Republicans who have been dismantling this plan,
yeah.
But we didn't know when. I think this is the first time that we're seeing hints of when that reality starts to set in.
Indiana Republicans approved a party platform at the convention this week that defines marriage as between a man and a woman after an inter-party fight over that language.
The proposed 2018 platform eliminated previous language to define marriage as between a man and a woman, but a groundswell among party members prompted GOP leadership to give convention delegates an option: vote for the 2018 language or revert back to previous language that defined marriage. The delegates overwhelmingly approved the 2016 language by a voice vote.
John Ketzenberger, GOP Chair Kyle Hupfer, talked in his convention speech about the need for the party to become more diverse and grow with the state as the state becomes more urban. Is this platform a step backwards towards that goal?
No, I think it's more a failing to take a step forward. And that's, I think, to Chairman Hupfer's defense, if you will. Look, he's trying to skate on the edge of a razor blade here, and he's going to get cut. He has a very conservative wing of his party that he's trying to bring along, and they don't want to come anywhere near anything except traditional language about marriages between a man and a woman, and that's it. But he also faces a reality of the changing nature of the state. You'll notice that a lot of the support for the new platform position came from Porter County, outside of Indianapolis, because we've long had this Indianapolis and everywhere else in the rest of the state and that tension that's existed in that regard. But there are younger Republicans, more progressive Republicans all over the state, for whom this is not really an issue, but it's becoming more so as the older generation continues to dig in its heels and perceive from the younger people's perception, keep the party from moving forward. And so that's what Chairman Hupfer's trying to do. He's trying to bring along the older part of the party with the understanding that if he fails, then the newer, younger part of the party may not come along.
If you're a storyteller, there was a happy coincidence that this happened. This vote happened on the same day as Indianapolis celebrated its Pride Festival. So the dichotomy of those being what it is this a bad look for the Republican Party? Or is this, I mean, they've had this language for a few years now and hasn't seemed to harm them at the polls.
That's true. I think this is, John's assessment is dead on. There are several ways that this could have been played. You either play the short-term strategy, which probably makes sense given the sentiment right now, the prevailing sentiment within the Republican Party in the state of Indiana in 2018. This makes sense. But again, at what cost? Are you sacrificing the future? It's sort of like if you're, I know you love sports metaphors, if you're a GM or an NFL coach, do you load it up now with all your free agents in hope of having your one shot with your aging players at the Super Bowl, or do you try to build something long-term with And I think it works in the short term, but that razor blade that John spoke about, falls carefully, because when you're talking about walking a razor blade, that who knows where you end up getting cut.
Part of Chairman Hupfer's defense was that, well, this doesn't alienate people because they were having an open debate and conversation about the issue, and so that will attract people to the party. If I'm someone who's either a member of the LGBT community or cares about people in the LGBT community, do I care that you just had a debate about it?
You'd have to ask them. I think the answer is probably yes, because the intensity on that issue is much higher for them than it is for your average voter. We've gone through. I've been a part of this conversation. I joked last week it wouldn't be the week before the election if I wasn't, or the convention if I wasn't talking about gay marriage and the Republican Party platform, but. But here we are for I think the fifth straight time that we've had a debate about this. I think Chairman Hupfer did a good job of create a really open process. The energy on the convention floor was that this was that everyone had their voice heard, and then when we moved on, everybody was fine. I mean, there was really no tension in the room on it. We've had five straight big win election years for Republicans in Indiana, with one notable exception, Joe Donnelly in 2012, which hopefully we rectify this year. But I think we did take a small step forward, broadening that plank of the platform.
To include single parents,
yeah. And we'll just keep trying to nudge it that way, I guess.
To Mike's point, they have been having this fight for a while, and yet they have, I mean, all but won everything you can win here in Indiana. So is there any reason for them to change things?
Oh, I think there is, because I think they're out of step. And sooner or later, that being out of step is going to catch up with them as younger people come into the voter rolls. Because what they've said here with this, with the majority vote out of that convention, is it's okay. We don't like gays. We don't like them. Okay? And we can't say that outright. So we'll use this kind of language here to make it clear to everybody that we don't like them. And that alienates not just the LGBT community, but also a lot of young people who are much more attuned to the changing demographics on that. So I think the future, the same way with immigration. I mean, the two big issues that are going to affect how the voters vote in the future are immigration and this issue. And the Republican Party is out of step on both of them.
Well, Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson said this week at that convention, by the way, that she supports Indiana's method to purge the voter rolls recently halted by a federal judge.
A federal judge ruled Indiana's voter purge system likely violates federal law. The day after that decision, Republican Secretary of State Connie Lawson told state GOP delegates it was designed to make it harder to cheat. She says some Democrats are attacking her, claiming the voter list maintenance process isn't fair and alleging Republicans are suppressing voters or removing legitimate voters from the rolls. Lawson calls those attacks categorically false.
John Schwannis, didn't a federal judge just tell Connie Lawson that these claims aren't categorically false?
Well, that could be an inference one could draw. But for those who share that view, that is they're not categorically false. It was probably something of a short-lived party or celebration because, as noted, we had the U.S. Supreme Court decision. The Tonya Walton Pratt decision came on a Friday. And then you had the U.S. Supreme Court, granted, different state, somewhat different.
But this is also two very different issues.
Well,
They deal with how you get rid of voters off the rolls.
They do. One, it has to do with whether you're registered in another state and it's provable through a database.
Which is fraught with mistakes.
Which is maybe fraught with mistakes.
Yeah.
But I'm not so willing to say that one doesn't affect the other. I think if you look at the alignment at the margins of this case, there is some overlap in terms of the state's authority to take what some would say drastic action to maintain an accurate
required by federal law.
Which is also required by federal law. So and then it also looks at the makeup of the court and what future decisions on this issue would suggest. And so I think there are more related, perhaps, than might be on the surface.
Democrats obviously want to make this a campaign issue. They've been talking about Republicans, so you know, charging that they restrict voting rights and all that for a long time.
They do.
Do you think, though, that it matters to most voters in this state?
Well, I don't think most voters think about that, and that's where the Democrats have failed to energize people on the issue. I don't think voters see it as a danger unless they've had their own name purged and they lose their franchise. I think the Democrats, that's right. There also has never been a proven case of fraud, at least in the last 15 years.
Yeah, but that we still
we're talking
at least,
about, we're
at
talking
least
about
not the kind
rules.
That would be addressed by this. Yeah.
So you can define it if you want, but I'm just pointing out that scale is balanced. But I do think that the reality here is for the Democrats to make any hay on this issue, they're going to have to really improve the number of people who turn out. And then you have something to talk about.
How do Democrats make this a more potable?
Well, I think exactly as John is talking about. And I think there's going to be less of a problem doing that in the off-year election in 2018. I think Democrats are energized because they're frightened. They're frightened by what happens with the supermajorities in the House, in Indiana, and in the Congress. And they're certainly frightened with who's leading the country. So I think we're going to have a lot better turnout in an off-year election than we've had before.
Quite frankly, though, is this a bad look for Connie Lawson and State House Republicans, that this method they put into place was just basically said, oh, no, this is against federal law?
Well, the method they put into place of actually maintaining the voter list was not thrown out. That's the national standard that the Supreme Court upheld this week. This was, can you go outside of the state and compare these lists to, compare voter to voter?
And use that to...
And that was a problem. This is a comprehensive program. The reason I think it was upheld, one, is that even if, which has never happened, but even if you go through this kind of four-year process of being inactive and then at the county, these decisions are made at the county level. They're not made at the state house. They're made by county clerks
and
county election boards. And even then, if you're a voter, it gets taken off the rolls. There's still a mechanism for you to vote, and they can look at that after the fact. So this is a system that,
and
remember, the motivation for this to begin was we had counties, not just in Indiana, but this is all over the country. We had more voters than residents, and that affects how they calculate voter turnout and buy machines and do a lot of different things.
So we do it fairly.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.